always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
And we're live. Welcome, everybody, here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I am Anthony Irwin, joined on this fine Thursday. Well, it's Friday my time, but Thursday night by you guys. Raj went to cover the game in person. And, you know, seeing as it was a road game, technically, it makes it kind of difficult for him to come back and, you know, come on the show with me. So I'm going to be rolling with you guys solo. Interesting game for a few reasons. One, that the Lakers kind of climbed back into it, right? Definitely climbed back into it. Really fun comeback. Looked like, you know, for a couple moments there that like maybe, just maybe, they would pull this one out. It was one of those classic Phil Jackson, like, if you're going to come back from in this kind of a game, you'd better get the lead the first chance that you get kind of games. And the Lakers didn't. And the Clippers were able to figure it out from there. But I thought there were aspects of the comeback that were interesting, most notably that DeAndre Ayton was not a part of that comeback and that he was just outright benched and then probably subtweeted by J.J. Redick after the game when he talked about how many free agents that the Lakers have on their roster right now. So that was interesting. Obviously, the fallout from the Genie Bus family LeBron thing has been interesting as well. So maybe we'll talk about that over the course of the show. But really, I think I'm going to lean on you guys here. This was really fun in that on offside, I watched this game with, you know, in the chat with those guys rather than kind of live tweet it on Twitter. And so, by the way, if you guys are interested in joining Pete and Raj and me and Damon in there, offside.gg is the place to go to check out how you can pop into that chat. But yeah, I thought it was really interesting in that, like, the Lakers opened up well, fell behind by way too much, climbed back into it, had opportunities. Some of the energy levels from various guys and from certain guys really in this game was certainly interesting as well. So a lot really to talk about from this game, and I'm going to lean on your guys's comments and questions over the course of it as well. So get those in as soon as you can. And yeah, let's dive on in. A quick reminder, please hit that subscribe button. If you guys are new around these parts, if you guys are watching from Twitter, the place to find the show and be able to tune in live is on youtube.com/@LakersLounge. If you guys are listening to the show in the morning via podcast, please subscribe wherever it is that you get your podcast, preferably on Odyssey, but anywhere works for me. And then get your 5-star reviews on iTunes or wherever it is that you listen to the show. 5-star reviews or positive reviews really help. But especially on iTunes, because that's still the biggest podcast platform out there. All right, let's talk about some of the specifics of this game. 112-104 was the final here. The Lakers fall to 26-17. The Clippers improve to 20-24. In terms of statistical individual performances, Luka led the way with 32 points, 11 rebounds, and 8 assists. Only had the one turnover, but really oddly was a game worse, minus 17 in this game. I have a couple of explanations for that that we might get to over the course, or that we will get to over the course of the show. For the Clippers, pretty balanced effort, right? You had Kawhi leading the way. He had 24 points. Harden had 18 points, but also dished out 10 assists, had 7 boards to go with that as well. Ivica Zubac, frankly, dominated this game from the center position. He had 18 points and 19 rebounds. He finished with 10 offensive rebounds. That's probably why DeAndre Ayton was eventually benched. And eventually the Lakers were like, you know what? Zubac is killing us to such an extent inside that we'll just go really small and see if we can impact the game that way, and found some success doing so. Jared Vanderbilt was a plus 16 in a game that the Lakers lost by 8. I think that's pretty telling of how poorly the Lakers centers played in this game. But yeah, I would say that like the starting point, also LeBron played, you know, pretty well by his standards, 23 points on 9 of 19 from the floor, 5 boards, 6 assists, a couple steals, 4 turnovers though in this one, finished a minus 7. As far as like individual performances, honestly, like the most impactful player on the court was Zubac. He was just incredible. He had a really good flop late in the game too. When he was, you know, he kind of walked himself under the rim and then did that thing where it's like, oh, I don't have a chance at the ball, so I'm just going to jump forward and yell really loud. And that created an extra possession that led to, I think, John Collins getting to the free throw line. But yeah, it was you know, the Lakers, I thought, started the game with good intensity. Then they went zone. Then they brought in Gabe. And that combination of playing kind of a passive defense and then bringing in the smallest player on your roster is just tough. Like, it's just not very, it's not very appealing as a rotation and as an approach. It's really difficult to go zone against a player as good as James Harden is, because not only can he shoot over the top of the zone, but then you also have lob threats on that roster with John Collins. And Harden was able to find some guys kind of sneaking behind the backside of the zone. And the Lakers like just really kind of leaked points during those moments. And honestly, like in general, whenever the Lakers go zone, it never feels like they're all that confident in it. And it's like, all right, we're going to show you this as a front. It's like a zone veneer where they like show it as a front. And then as soon as, you know, the team that they're playing against runs anything to beat the zone, they then fall back into a man defense, which is kind of an interesting curveball to throw, because the team that you're playing against would run a zone breaker and then have to go to a man offense as well. So it's like, I wouldn't go completely away from that approach, especially on sideline or baseline out of bounds kind of situations on occasion. But I don't think that the Lakers zone is as effective as it needs to be to run it as frequently as they do, as like a defense that they call out and run for multiple possessions in a row. I don't think the coaching staff has been very good in implementing it. I don't think the guys really believe in it very much. And just in general, it's just not a very effective defense. And I'm going to go back and rewatch at some point, but it felt in the moment like the Lakers kind of started letting go of the rope. And the beginning point of them doing so was going zone. And, you know, between that and Gabe, it's just such a disaster. Like, Austin needs to come back, frankly, to get rid of the Gabe minutes. Like, if you swap out Gabe Vincent's minutes for Austin Reeves in this one, the Lakers probably win this game. And I honestly think that has to be the move whenever Austin comes back. And Gabe just should be a break glass in case of emergency type of player, depending on, you know, what the injury situation might be from that point moving forward. But yeah, I just thought like that was kind of the frustrating moments. And while the Lakers were losing the lead, my problem with zone in professional basketball and really in all of basketball, but especially in professional basketball, is zone, much like a switching defense, just kind of puts defenders or players on the court into a very passive attitude. You know, all right, we're going to switch here. I'm not going to look to fight over the screen. I'm not going to look to, you know, make this player work hard to get the switch that they're looking for. You know, somebody comes into my zone, I'm going to pay attention to them. And then I'm not going to pay attention to them, depending on like how quickly they get out of my zone. And then, you know, with rebounding, especially because in like college and in high school, if you run a 2-3 zone, you can have somebody just camp out in the key. And it's still a little bit more difficult to box out and rebound in a zone in high school and in college. But in the pros, it's especially difficult to rebound, defensive rebound, in a zone, because you have that 3 second in the key thing, and like you're paying attention to that. You're paying attention to the weak side. Most teams, when they see zone, put as many shooters out on the court as they possibly can. So you're focused on the 3-point line as well. Like if you are just religiously committed to a zone in the NBA, you have a decent chance or an okay chance at not sucking in those moments. Like Miami runs a really tough zone from time to time that like you watch them play and you're like, okay, yeah, I can kind of see why this zone is effective. But if you run a zone and the starting point is like, please don't knock down too many 3-pointers, you're in trouble. And that's kind of the way that the Lakers zone has looked to this point. So I thought going zone, bringing in Gabe, Drew, and I didn't think they played Drew Timmy nearly enough in this game. Jackson Hayes was really bad. DeAndre Ayton was really bad. And then, you know, down the stretch of the game, after the Lakers had kind of clawed back into the game, Rui missed a few open shots. Marcus Smart missed a wide open three in the corner. And like your margin for error in climbing back into a game when you put yourself down by like 25, 26 points, your margin for error is as thin as Harrison's hair. And the Lakers just weren't able to take care of business. All right, let's go ahead and take a quick look at some of the individual performances in this one. I'm going to start with Luka, because if you're just reading the box score in the morning, you're going to be like, damn, 32 points, that seems good. 11 boards, that seems good. 8 assists, that's good. 3 steals, so he was trying on defense as well. Okay, like you would think this would be one of those dominant Luka performances, but his shot diet and his shot efficiency in this one was really pretty substandard by his standards. Now, like I will say that, you know, most players, you know, you go 32, 11, and 8. By most players' standards, you're like, that's a pretty damn good game. But by Luka Doncic standards, efficiency is also going to matter as well, given how much he has the ball in his hands. And the Lakers, for a long time, like they scored 18 points in the second quarter. You know, you had, you know, 29 points to the 36 that the Clippers scored in the second quarter or in the first quarter. So, like, you know, Luka played the entire first quarter, was absolutely cooking in that first quarter, did a lot of his damage in that first quarter, and then really kind of fell off and, like, never really looked very comfortable on the basketball court, most noticeably in, like, the very, very last chance that the Lakers had at like, maybe making the Clippers sweat a little bit. They got, Jared Vanderbilt had a pretty miraculous steal there at half court, Ball finds its way to Luka, and he dribbles up to the three-point line. He's wide open. Every Clipper fan in the arena is like, fuck, 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 fuck. You know, like, no, 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 no. And then he doesn't shoot. He didn't shoot it. He thought that there was going to be some back pressure. Didn't look very comfortable. Didn't look very confident. Passed the ball up. Got the ball back. Shot a now actually contested three-pointer. Missed it. And the game was over. Game was already over before then. But I'm just using this to kind of highlight that I didn't think he was very comfortable out there. But yeah, he shot 11 of 27 from the field. That is really poor by his standards. And he went 3 of 13 from three-point range. And look, if that is the engine of your offense, then your offense is broken. You know, then it's going to be really difficult to survive that kind of inefficient performance playing against a team that was clicking as balanced as the Clippers were clicking. Now, look, most nights, you know, you don't worry about it too much. And you would think that, like, you know, especially like, if the Lakers have Austin in there for the minutes that Gabe was playing tonight, they win this game. Like, just, I that's a good enough production line from Luka, even if it's inefficient. And LeBron played well enough that, like, if Austin goes out there and plays an average game, then the Lakers wind up winning this game. Maybe it takes a different path than than this one did, but like, you know, I thought that the Lakers gave themselves ample opportunity even after digging themselves that 25-26 point hole. I thought that the Lakers gave themselves opportunities to win this thing. And if you have opportunities to win this thing and you've dug yourself a 25-26 point hole, then that would indicate, you know, getting your second or third best player back would give yourself a pretty good chance at winning that game most nights against that team. But still, that was the case. And I thought it was really interesting down the stretch of the game, down the home stretch of the game, that it was actually LeBron being kind of the thrust of the offense. And Luka was playing a lot more off of the ball. The Lakers were going to that LeBron like flare screen action that on one play got Vando a dunk, and then on another play got LeBron an and one. And they were going to that quite a bit. You know, and it kind of makes sense because the Clippers were putting Kawhi on Luka. So you're like, okay, well, if you're gonna do that, like let's take Kawhi out of the play. And let's run offense on this side of the court, the opposite side of the court. And the Lakers were you know, pretty effective doing that. And I think they'd be even more effective with Austin out there on the court. So there was a lot to kind of, like, you know, piece through. And I can't wait to rewatch this one, you know, with a little clearer eyes on, you know, all right, here's what this guy finished with. What actually was going on there? Because the other thing, too, that drove me nuts, I know this isn't like a Luka-specific point, but another thing that was happening throughout this game that was driving me nuts was like, man, how many layups are you going to miss? Like, Vando missed like three or four layups. Luka missed a couple of bunnies. Jackson Hayes missed a couple of floaters that he has been making recently. The Lakers shot 13 of 18 from the free throw line. It was a annoying game in that, like, you know, the Lakers got to within 2 points of this game. And you're like, damn it, if Vando made like half of his layups, the Lakers would be winning. And I'm just like, they're layups, dude. And like, you know, there were a couple of them were wide open. Gabe missed a layup, and you know, Ayton missed a couple of bunnies as well. it was just one of those annoying games. And I kind of want to give the Lakers a little bit of credit to kind of climbing back into it, but it's also kind of annoying to lose to little brother. So what do you do? All right, I'm going to dive on into some of your guys' questions and comments over the course of the show, which means I will start with the most important sound that we have on this here channel. Fuck Washington! All right, first and foremost, Laker Pride 6189 writes, honestly, at this point, I have more confidence in having Stevie Wonder describe my outfit than describe my outfit than watching Marcus Smart take a three. Dude, he had that, you know, he had a corner three right in front of us, right? Like, you know, for those of us who were watching from home, he had a near side corner three. He was wide open. And it was like, I think it was like a 4-point game when he took it, or maybe a 5-point game when he took it. And you're like, please, not confident, but like, please, please go in. And he wound up, you know, clanking it. And you're just, and then, you know, the ball kind of farts out. Clippers go the other way. And I think they get a bucket, if not an and one. And you're like, ugh. That's annoying. There was another weird play, a weird review in this one, where Marcus should have been shooting free throws. The Clippers challenged the play, and then the referees decide that Marcus fouled whoever, the guy, what's his name? Jordan Miller. They decide that Marcus fouled Jordan Miller on the rebound beforehand. And my question is, like, how far back do those can those reviews go? Because, like, if you're saying, all right, we're going to basically analyze the entire possession before the attempt that a foul was called on, then you can find a foul on basically any play to decide the outcome of any review that you want.